Welcome to the Explore Words, Discover Worlds podcast, presented by Bradford Literature Festival. In this episode, we take a closer look at the film Our River, Our Sky, set in Baghdad during winter 2006. Our River, Our Sky is a remarkable and moving view of everyday life in a war zone. We'd suggest watching Our River, Our Sky before listening to this episode. Recorded live at the 2023 Bradford Literature Festival, hear from director Maysoon Pachachi as she discusses her award-winning film feature debut.
I'd really like you to ask some questions as to what you say what you thought about the film, or just comments. I'd kind of rather you took it in the direction that you wanted the conversation to go in. Does anybody want to ask a question?
Thank you so much. We really enjoyed the film. I think it was great in giving a snapshot into life at that time and really focusing on the lives of Iraqis at that time and how it was normal for Sunnis to be friends or married to people of different sects and religions. One thing that I found really interesting was going in, I was expecting possibly a heavier look on the occupation forces and how they were part of daily life. And I found there was a distinct lack of a focus or any kind of looking at the occupation forces and how they were kind of like the source of a lot of problems at that time. Was that like a conscious choice to focus on the lives of Iraqis at this time rather than, because it's been done 100 times, on focusing on the lives of Americans and the British forces at that time? So I was just wondering what was the thinking behind that choice?
Well, somebody asked me, you know, well, where are the perpetrators and where are the... Actually, I'm not interested in them. I was not interested in them. I was just interested in how people were managing their lives in this situation where, you know, a bomb can go off at the end of your street. You don't know why. You don't know what it's, you know, and so forth on a daily basis. You know, we were shooting this in 2019. The American tanks weren't still on the streets at that point. And I really didn't want to go down that route. I thought, I don't want to see them, you know. And it's, there's a reference made to that when Tamara, the girl who kind of loses it at a certain point, says we've all become savages, us and the Americans and everybody, you know. I mean, there's a, you know, they're referred to in that way. But the actual fact, it depends, you know, and, you know, if you work with the Americans, then your children get kidnapped and you shouldn't work with, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it was a conscious choice, yes, because the film is anyway 2 hours long and it's... And we didn't really have the means to actually do that. I mean, go into the American army and what was going on there and so forth. I wasn't interested in that story, to tell you the truth.
Hi, I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you for that. It's really touching to get a snapshot, I guess, of what life was like for Iraqis there. And I just was curious about, like, were there any stories that inspired the script that you wrote? Was there much involvement in terms of like how you took the direction with the film in terms of all the different families and the way they were sort of living? Like, what inspired the writing process for you?
The film that I made before this was a documentary film, and it was about an Iraqi women's photographic project, which took place in Syria, which at that time was a safe place to be. And this was in 2006, in fact, this time. And one of the things that happened, and my job was just to document this whole workshop, which went on for several months. There were 12 women from 5 different cities in Iraq who didn't know each other, different religions, different educational backgrounds, different classes. That came together to learn about photography. None of them had a background in photography. And part of what they did was, what the trainer asked them to do is to make a map or a chart of their life so far. And so they started with a line, you know, I was born, everything was fine, and then my dad died and things got really difficult. But then all this then happened and like that. And so they had these kind of charts of a sort, and they would write bits of poetry or comments at points of changing, points of change in their life. Suddenly there was the Iran-Iraq war try to isolate the emotion of that moment. That's what they were asked to do. And then they pasted a lot of personal photographs, you know, family photographs and friends and the house I used to live in, but it got bombed, you know, that sort of business. And each woman had to get up in front of the others, they were all women, and tell their story, and tell, you know, present this map of their life. And when the trainer, who was British and a young 27-year-old woman, photographer from here, she told me she was going to do this. And I said, after 35 years of Saddam, where you had to be very careful what you said, people are not going to get up and tell their stories in front of people they don't know. And I was completely wrong, because they did. People really listened, and I got the feeling that they were listening not with their ears, but with their own stories. So there are fragments of some of the people, some of those stories in this film, but not very many. But for example, the woman who goes into labor when there's heavy bombing going on outside and so forth, that was somebody that who we were in contact with. I was in a group with Hefa, which was Iraqi Women Against Sanctions. It was called Act Together, Iraqi Women Against Sanctions and War in Iraq. And we were in touch with a lot of women's organizations then. And there was a woman who was a friend of one of the people who was with us, who was exactly in that situation, who, you know, held on and didn't want anybody to know that she was actually in labor until it was 6 o'clock in the morning and the curfew was lifted and they could go out onto the streets. Everybody was furious, and the baby was okay in the end. But it was sort of, and I thought, okay, what would it be like in a situation? What decision would you make in a situation like that, you know? So some of them came from that. Some of them came from just other parts of our life. I mean, two of us wrote the script. There was me in London and Irada Jabouri, who is a Baghdad-based novelist, short story writer, and poetry sometimes. And she's also a lecturer at Baghdad University. She was there, I was here. I couldn't go to Baghdad, she couldn't come here. So we met, and during this time, she found herself unable to write one word of fiction. She said to me, it's just a lie. And that's, I mean, some of the stuff about Sarah comes from her, which I wrote into. She didn't. She just told me this story. What she did was, as she went around, went about her work, you know, going to buy vegetables and take a child to school and all this business, she would overhear kind of small scenes being enacted, bits of conversation, and get a sense, and just make notes, just verbatim, as they went down. And in the meantime, in 2004, I went back to Iraq for the first time in 35 years, something like that, and with a colleague, an Iraqi filmmaker who's also based in this country, Qasim Abid, he and I started a free-of-charge film training center for young people in Baghdad in 2004. And so I was very much in touch with the students there, and sometimes we needed to bring them out of Iraq to complete their films, because the situation was so dodgy. So it's bits and pieces of lots of different stories, and some of mine, some of stuff, you know, that's happened to people I've known and friends and so forth. So, and partly it's just imagination. It's just you hit on people sometimes.
Thank you so much, Maysoon. This is a film which I wanted to see for so many years, are waiting for it. I've seen all the documentary films, and so congratulations us. I mean, also as much as to you. Thank you. Just I'm curious about the response to the film, because this film is so Baghdadi. It's not just Iraqi.
Yeah.
It's about Baghdad. Yeah. It's the accents, the talks, the jokes. I mean, even little things you can hardly hear. The sense of humor in it, despite all the cruelty of the reality and everything. Yet people are singing sometimes, they are talking, mumbling, everything. So Baghdad is well. So I don't know, I mean, how much in translation, I tried to avoid reading the translation because really I didn't need to, but also didn't mean much to me. Mm-hmm. I wonder, I mean, if the audience are non-Iraqis, how much they going to catch from this? The jokes about the dogs, which is very familiar for us, about all the drunk man singing the little song, which every single word means something. Mm. It's kind of almost engraved in our memory. It's like everything else for other nations, I mean, is these little things which really constitute in the end the identity. Mm. And this is a film so much about identity, I see it. It's not just Iraq under occupation and everything. Yeah. So I wonder what kind of response you had or whatever. Yeah.
To showing it to audiences that are non-Iraqi, you mean? Well, it was really interesting because we had a screening at the Rain Dance Film Festival here in October of last year. And it was sold out, which was very surprising. And half the audience was Iraqi, which I was very surprised at, because it was not the sort of thing that they would usually go to. And it was an interesting conversation between that. And, you know, somebody who's known me for quite some time got up and he said, I've known Maysoon for a long time. And I thought, oh, no, he's one of these guys who, when they were sort of Iraqi community groups, and they'd have somebody to come to talk about a particular subject, and then they would throw the conversation open to the audience to ask, make a comment. This is the guy who always used to get up and make a half an hour speech. And so he got up, and I thought, oh, no, you know. And he said, I've known Maysoon a long time, but I'm surprised because she's hardly lived in Iraq, which is true. It's a very Iraqi film. And it's a very Baghdadi film, he said. And Baghdad is the place I know. If I know anything in Iraq, it's there. It's Baghdad. But the non-Iraqi British audience who was got the jokes. I mean, they were laughing as much as everybody else, you know, about the dog joke, and the business about the fortune teller. You know, you go to there, you get used to it. And so forth. And I think it's just a certain kind of black humor, which and also in the bus, you know, in the bus when he's saying we have plenty of opportunities, this could happen, that could happen, etc. This is a real scene. This actually happened, you know, and with a little bit of embellishment of the dialogue, but this was the dialogue that went on. It was like this. That was something that Irada witnessed. I didn't witness. She was involved in this. So I think mostly people do. I mean, this film has been shown in Germany, in France, in Cairo, also in Morocco, in Baghdad. That was interesting. So people, they responded to it. I mean, the French, for example, responded to the jokes. The sort of, I don't know, yeah. So we'll see when it goes on release generally in this country. What it's like. I don't know. Did you get the jokes?
Yes. Apart from the giraffe one.
The giraffe, yes. Well, she didn't get to finish
her. What is the punchline?
The punchline is how do you get a giraffe in the fridge? You open the fridge, you take the elephant out, and you stuff the giraffe in. Yeah. And that was a really, you know, I heard that a lot from Irada's daughter, who is Dima, who was very, very funny. She came on the photographic project with us, and she said at one point she said to me, "Translate this for me. You have to translate something for me." I said, "What?" And she said, "Well, tell her the trainer, who is British, I'm an Iraqi woman as well, and I have a story to tell. So she has to tell me how to take pictures. She's 6 years old at this point. And she was full of these jokes, riddles of that kind. So that's where I sort of stored them up.
I mean, I think it's an interesting question. I'm clearly not Iraqi. I've never been to Baghdad or Iraq. But I think it probably does have major pertinence with regard to Baghdad and Iraq. But I also think that, you know, speaking to the question you're asking, I think it has a lot of universal issues, that it's very much about family and how you deal with your ambitions and hopes for your family and things like that. And I think that applies to any part of the world. So I think it's a film with a lot of universal resonance. And I find it, I really find it very moving.
The jokes in a way, the jokes are there. The jokes and the music is resistance. This is
the
psychic resistance. I think it's.
I can't use the word enjoyed, but I just felt like I just said to Yasmin, I wish I had a ton of chocolate or something. But for me, the other side of this is, given all the rhetoric we hear about refugees and asylum seekers now, I think it's really timely to see this because we're seeing that side of it.
Yeah,
we're hearing the stories, the lives, the consequence of the war. You know, foreign policy making here, what that's meant for people there to then come here and the sorts of decisions they're having to make. So I found that really actually very powerful to see and understand. I mean, I have some understanding of it myself as a displaced person, but still, nevertheless, to see that in that context and decisions that families are having to make, I think is a very powerful story to tell.
Well, I think it's important that it's because somehow people have a sort of feeling of thinking, people think, oh, I know what, I'll go to Britain. You know, and actually people don't want to leave their place. And she was, you know, and so I think it, and that's why we gave that speech to Sarah. You know, it's like, and actually, if you talk to Irada, she says, I'll die if I leave this country. She's traveled around a lot. She's managed to travel around now some. But my co-writer, but she doesn't, I mean, she doesn't want to leave the country. And I've heard that from a lot of people. I mean, I have a lot of Palestinian friends, some very good friends in Gaza, for example. And I remember talking to one guy there and at a particularly difficult time. And he said to me, yeah, but what I do here has some sort of relevance. What am I going to do in, I mean, there was no chance of him anyway coming to here. But, and so I think that's, and it's, people need to understand that. People actually don't want to leave. And it's only some extreme circumstances that force them to think about doing that, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an important thing to say at this particular time in this country, frankly.
People from the States are mentioned, from Britain, and nothing about Spain. That were a very important point on the situation. I enjoyed somebody said. I like it a lot. Thank you for your introduction, because I understood much more. And this hope that you mentioned for me is really amazing, because like the world continue to go, just to think that there is always hope and things are going to improve is a powerful idea. Thank you.
You have to fight for it, though, the sense of hope, because it's not easy to sort of say, oh, it'll be okay, because it often isn't. And people always imagine that once the actual shooting stops in a war, everything is okay. It's not. There's an immense amount of destruction, obviously. I mean, for me, this film is like a thing of repair. You're trying to repair all the time things that have been shattered. Yeah, Spain was involved. It's been dad.
Thank you. I really did enjoy the film and all the aspects of the culture and the life and everything that was that we're having to undertake was really did come across. I just wondered what type of resistance you might have met in any way from the authorities about making the film. Were there any? What were the barriers that you faced to get it in Iraq? Yes, to get it to where we can now see that. And as you said, it's been, you know, distributed more wider.
I actually in Iraq we didn't face any real barriers. It was 2019, so by that time ISIS had been more or less defeated, but you know there was still the remnants of all that there. But we didn't. I mean, the government had nothing to do with it. They didn't, and the house which the architect's office by the river, and all that. That's a house that belongs to the culture Ministry of Culture, and they let us have it, and we had guards with us. They were, when we were shooting by the river, there were police around as kind of protection, although we didn't really face anything. Then the only sort of dodgy time was when we were shooting in an area called Betawin, which was a very elegant area at a certain point, but it's quite a ruin. And the scene where the taxi driver is running down a street and it's really demolished. The first assistant director said to me, "You go sit in the car." I said, "What do you mean, go sit in the car? I'm directing this film." And he said, this is an area has become... I said, "It's a very beautiful area." He said, "Yeah, it's become a thing of drug dealers and militias, and you need not to be around." And so I did go and sit in the car, and the cameraman was told that there's no such thing as tripods and all of that kind of stuff. It's just put it on your shoulder, shoot it, get in the car, and leave. So that was the only thing like that really we got. Otherwise, it was quite, you know, it was quite supportive. I mean, we had there was quite a funny thing in the house where this sort of courtyard house, as I was saying, with the architect's office is. We went there to sort of do a location scout on it to see if it would work for us. And there were two guys guarding the place because it's a historic place. And when we came in, the Quran was on the tape recorder or something. We went, we looked, we came back downstairs, and the guy said, "Yeah, we put the Quran because of the jinn." You know what a jinn is? Jinn is like a sort of malevolent spirit. And it's what comes out of Aladdin's lamp, for example. And I said, "You have a jinn in this house?" He said, "Yes." I said, "What does he do?" And he said, "Well, we hear him at night. He comes in, he breaks the light bulbs, turns the water on and off, steals our blankets, you know, that sort of thing." I said, "Oh." He said, "But you know, I feel sorry for him. Really, I feel sorry for him. I think he's a very disturbed soul. And we need to find a solution for him." And I said, "Yeah, and what would that solution be?" He said, "Well, we're trying to look for a wife for him." And I said, "Oh, so how's that going?" And he said, "But that's the problem. Ya akhti, that's the problem. Nobody wants to marry him." It was very typical Baghdadi sort of story. It's like completely crazy, you know. So that was quite good fun. And when we came to shoot by the river, some policemen turned up and they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "We're making a film here, blah, blah, we have some scenes here." He said, "Look at the height of the river. They let the dams open because there had been flooding up north, very heavy rains in Kurdistan and Turkey and so forth. And so to save people from being flooded up there, they'd opened up the dams, which meant that the river in Baghdad was very high and very fast and quite scary." And I said, "Well, we have scenes we have to shoot on the river." He said, "Well, we're not going to let you go. It's too dangerous." So, but anyway, 2 days later, everything had calmed down a bit, and then we were able to do that. But we got there, the production design crew had got there to set up the thing that belonged to the boatman, you know, his little space, a boatman, and they'd arrived there at 4 o'clock in the morning and done on that. 7 o'clock we arrived to shoot, and the water was lapping at the set, and it was just, so we had to move it down the river. We had, you know, interesting problems like that. Some barriers. But I mean, in terms of from officialdom, no, we didn't, actually, oddly enough.
I won't comment on the film, it was very moving.
Thank you.
But on the subject of jokes, my mother used to say about the Second World War that she was in India, by the way,
mm-hmm.
The nearer the front, the dirtier the jokes were. And actually, the joke you said about the giraffe reminds me of a joke Rabbi Lionel Blue mm-hmm. said about the trouble with lots of family in the house. I could tell it to you, but, you know, Rabbi, what should I do? There's too many people here. Well, get a chicken. And we still explore next week. What do I do? Well, you need a cow. And he went on and on quite a number. And then ever so many animals. And Rabbi, blah, blah, well, get rid of them all. And you know, the situation is just the same, but they felt at peace. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think that thing of sort of bleak humor in those kind of very extreme situations is really universal. I mean, I think it happens in most places, really. Yeah.
But it's a terrible film. I mean, it's a fantastic film. And when it was ending, I didn't see the what was happening in Iraq with that shock and awe, but it looked like shock and awe to me. I don't know what was happening.
What, at the end of the film?
Yeah.
That's a dust storm. It's a dust storm. It's a comet. It's a
variant. Oh, I thought it was a dust storm, and then I thought it was the other.
No,
yeah,
because
I did think it was, but.
Well, yeah, it was sort of okay. Now Saddam is dead. Okay. It was quite a provocative act to do it at that particular time because it was the aid, and so forth. But it was but the troubles don't stop with there. Yeah. The troubles were there, of course, during Saddam. But I mean, yeah. So that's what that's about, really.
Thank you very much for making this film. I could relate, strangely enough, because I live in Pakistan now, and there's growing hysteria there. And I wanted to ask you how the Iraqis received this film.
Well, it was shown about 3 or 4 times in Baghdad and Mosul. They liked it. I mean, they liked it. But, you know, they were. They would say to me, were you here in 2006? And I'd have to say, no, I wasn't here in 2006. And actually, I haven't spent a great deal of my life in this country. But my roots are deep here. And I said, why did you ask that? He said, because maybe those of us who actually lived through this period here and, on the ground, we probably would have made a different film. And I said, I'm sure that's true, because you would have focused on other things. And the films that have come out are much more about the violence and the Americans and so forth. It's more like that.
I think the way you covered the fragility of certain people, the vulnerability, and the way they got through the day, sometimes through black humor, that's something that sometimes when you're in a situation you can't see.
Mm. Yeah.
So it was a very valid viewpoint, because I moved to Pakistan just before lockdown, and I used to hear, you don't know what it's like. But now that I'm there,
mm-hmm.
and I've just stepped out for a short while, there is a different perception. Sometimes you can get actually, you can ruminate on a deeper level
mm-hmm.
when you're not part of it.
It's true. Yeah.
So maybe you're providing them with food for thought by your take on things.
Possibly, yes. And I'm a sort of person who lives on a bridge, I mean, at a certain point, after a lot of crises about who am I, blah, I thought, okay, you're just somebody who lives on a bridge, and you can see this side of the river and that side of the river, and maybe you can tell the stories of this side of the river to those people over there and stuff like that. I think I'm a conduit.
So, you know, facts change, but the truth stays the same. Mm-hmm. And human stories, whether it's Baghdad, whether it's Lahore, mm-hmm. whether it's London or Bradford, it's the ultimate truth. And that speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. That doesn't lie. So that's why I could relate to it, because you know, I had a problem even getting here. I was a bit frightened. And that's nothing compared to what people were going through over there.
It's mm-hmm. interesting. Thank you.
Any final questions?
There was a funny thing that happened in one of Baghdad screenings that one guy came up to me and he said, I know I like the film, but there is one word you used which I think was not good. And I thought, I couldn't imagine what he was talking about. And he said, I said, well, what is it? And he said, احنا العراقيين مو كلاب. We Iraqis are not, we're not dogs. I said, no, yeah, I realize that. It's a joke, actually, and it's not a joke that I made up myself, actually. It's a joke that was doing the rounds in Baghdad at a certain time. It's not meant to say. I didn't know how to answer the man. It was completely a little bit bananas.
I was just thinking we should clarify one point, that it's the reason that you didn't spend a lot of time in Baghdad was because your father was ambassador to the United Nations.
Yeah.
So you were taken out of Baghdad.
I was taken out of Baghdad. I have spent a sum total of 4 years of my life in Baghdad when I was a child. So between the ages of 3 and 6, 7, 8, and then an extra year when I was 10. So, yeah.
But it's very much a part of your life.
Yeah, yeah, it is a part of my life. It's really the turning point for me was the Gulf War in 91. It's like everybody else at the time, I was sitting and watching smart bombs, so-called, you know, blowing up bridges and so forth. And I went into shock, and I couldn't remember my name. I couldn't remember how old I was. It was just a very, and I started to forget my English, which I've spoken all my life, just very ordinary words like window and door and so forth. And I made a film at that point and for Channel 4, which was interviews with a lot of women from Iraq who were living here in this country at that point, of different religions and different political inclinations and so forth, and a lot of archive footage. So that was it. That's when I sort of refound Iraq in a way.
Well, we hope the film's going to come out in September. I've now seen it 3 times in less than a year. And I think I kind of found it more powerful today than I did the first or second time. I think it gets better. The first time I watched it, I thought it was good. But each time I watch it, I find it more emotional. And I find more in it. I find more of the structure and how it's been made. So I can certainly encourage you to watch it again. And so I hope you get to see it again when it comes out. And I hope you encourage so Pitcherville Cinema to show it, because I think it looked great in Pitcherville Cinema on proper on proper DCP. So I do thank you all for coming along today, and please thank Maisine for coming up from London today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support the festival, please subscribe, share this episode with others, and leave a rating. Don't forget to mark your calendars as the Bradford Literature Festival returns for its 10th year from 28th of June to the 7th of July 2024.